I can see the building. I turn away and I start walking down the street. I stop in my truck. I take my keys out of my pocket. I open the door, climb inside, shut the door. It is warmer inside, but not much. I put the key in the ignition and I start the engine and I turn on the heat and I wait and I start to cry again. I start to cry. I want to stop, but I can't stop. I want to take a deep breath and tell myself that everything is okay. But I'm unable to do so. I have no control over myself. I have no control over my emotions. I have no control over my body's need to express those emotions. All of the time I spent sitting alone in my cell trying to teach myself how to regulate my behavior is worthless, irrelevant. Lily killed herself. Hung herself in the shower. She's dead. She's fucking dead. It doesn't matter that I don't want to cry. It doesn't matter that I want to stop. I can't do anything. I have no control. I cry and I wait for the heat. The heat comes and I sit in front of the vents and I stop shaking. The inside of the truck becomes warmer and warmer and I stop crying. My body needs a break, needs to rest, needs to try to let my mind and my heart accept what has happened. They don't want to accept it. They know one word. No. They keep telling me that I'm going to wake up and find her waiting for me. No. They keep screaming, "She's not dead, she's not dead, she's not dead." No. She is the only person I have ever truly loved. She is the only person who made me want to live. She is the only person on earth who could hurt me. She killed herself this morning. Walked into the bathroom and tied a knot and hung herself from the shower. It didn't matter what I felt, how much she meant to me, how much I loved her. It didn't fucking matter. She hung until she stopped breathing. She's dead. My mind and heart won't accept it. No. I reach for my pack of cigarettes. I take one out and light it. I take a deep drag, hold it in, exhale. I stare out the window. I feel empty. I feel like my heart has been ripped out of my chest. I feel disconnected, as if my body and mind are no longer part of the same vessel. I am exhausted. As I lift my arm to bring the cigarette back to my mouth, my arm is heavy. My hand is heavy. The cigarette is heavy. Everything I do takes great effort. I inhale slowly. I feel the smoke traveling through my throat and into my lungs. I exhale slowly. Feel the smoke coming back. I am so tired. What the fuck am I gonna do? Somebody please help me. I finish the cigarette, put it out. I look into the rearview mirror, see the house down the street. I want to be away. I put my truck into first gear. I want to be away from that house. I pull out of my parking space. I want to be away from that fucking house. I start driving down the street. I have no idea where I am and I have no idea where I'm going. I just want to be away. I drive. I smoke another cigarette. I turn on the radio and I turn off the radio. The neighborhoods all look the same. Row after row of brownstones. Tree-lined streets with sidewalks and overhead lights. I see churches and schools, fire stations and playgrounds. I see all sorts of small shops. Shoe shops, clothing shops, candle shops, art and sculpture shops, real estate shops, bookshops, garden shops. I see grocery stores and restaurants, convenience stores and gas stations. I see bars and liquor stores. On almost every block, I see either a bar or a liquor store. Beautiful bars filled with people drinking. Beautiful liquor stores devoted to alcohol. Beautiful establishments where I can make this nightmare go away. Beautiful bars and beautiful liquor stores. On almost every block. I feel the urge. Drink. The instinct begins to assert itself. Destroy. My old friend, the fury, starts to rise. It says, kill what you feel. kill what you feel. The fury rises, it says kill. My hands start shaking. I can feel my heart beating. My teeth chatter. I take a deep drag of my cigarette, it doesn't help. I am an alcoholic and a drug addict. I have used substances to control and to kill my emotions and my insecurities and my rage for my entire life. I have spent the bulk of my existence using alcohol and drugs to destroy what I feel so that I wouldn't have to feel it. I have never felt like this before. Never even close. I know death. I've seen it and been close to it, but not this type of death. I know grief and sorrow and sadness, but I have never felt them so deeply. I know horror, but I have never cringed before it. I know self-destruction, but it has never made me shake. I don't know what I'm going to do. There are beautiful bars and beautiful liquor stores on every block. I can make this all go away. The fury says kill, kill, kill. It's time to destroy. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I can't deal with my feelings. I pull over, park. I turn off the engine, take out the key, turn out the lights. I look up and down the block. There are two bars within eyesight, one liquor store. I have $4 in my pocket and I have three reasonable options. Go to the most crowded of the bars and take half-finished drinks from tables when people stand and leave. Go to a less crowded bar and find a drunk. Drunks are stupid with their mouths and stupid with their wallets, and if I find one, I can probably get one to buy me a drink or several drinks. Fuck the bars. Go to a liquor store. If they sell what I like to drink, which is cheap, strong, gutter wine, I could probably afford a bottle. I need something now. I need to make this go away. I open the door. Step outside. Close the door. It's cold. I look around me. I start shaking. The wind is screaming. I start walking. I walk toward a corner where there's a bar across the street from a liquor store. I can see people through the window of the bar. They look young and happy. They're jumping up and down, dancing, moving to the beat of some cheery music. All I want is a drink. Two drinks. As many drinks as it takes to make it all go away. To send me hurtling toward oblivion. To destroy. Fuck those happy people. Fuck that cheery music. I walk toward the liquor store. It is on the opposite corner. It is a small store. It has a bright neon sign hanging above the door that reads, Liquor. The windows are filled with bright posters of bikini-clad women holding beer cans. Behind the posters, I can see rows and rows of bottles. Beautiful bottles, filled with alcohol. I open the door and I step inside. It's warm and bright with fluorescent light. There's a counter along the front wall. A man stands behind it. There are cigarettes above the counter and candy bars below it. There is a television behind the man. It is broadcasting images of the store taken by cameras in each of the corners. I am the store's only customer. I can see myself on the television and I can see the man behind the counter on the television. He is staring at me. I ignore him. I start walking down one of the aisles. The man watches me as I walk. I stare at a set of coolers along the back wall. The shit I drink is always in a cooler along the back wall, always hidden away so that respectable customers don't have to see it. It is of the lowest class of alcoholic beverage, produced by liquor companies for poor drunks who need a strong, quick charge. Though it is called wine, it doesn't resemble real wine in any way. It is much cheaper, much more powerful. It comes in thick, squat bottles that are effective weapons when empty. It tastes like grape juice mixed with rubbing alcohol. Long-term users of it often die from the effects that it has on one's internal organs. It burns holes in the stomach. It eats away the lining of the intestine. It causes cirrhosis of the liver. It is liquid death. Available in a pint or a quart, sometimes a liter, always in a cooler along the back wall. I find four different types lining the bottom shelf of the corner cooler. I am familiar with all of them, have experienced the horrors of each. The worst of them, and the one I enjoy the most, is known as the Rose. Its label calls it a fruit-flavored, ethanol-fortified dessert wine. I call it a quick ride to hell. It is available in 1-liter bottles. At the height of my drinking, I could down 3 of the 1-liter bottles before losing consciousness. At this point, having not had a drink in almost 6 months, 1 bottle will do everything that I need it to do. I need it to kill. I need it to kill. I open the cooler, pick up a bottle, look at the price. Just under $3. With my remaining dollar, I can get myself a bag of potato chips. This is not what I expected to be doing here. Getting drunk and eating chips on my first night of freedom, my first night in Chicago. Were it up to me, I would be with Lily. Were it up to me, I would be asleep in her arms. She's dead, in a cooler in some fucking morgue, and I'll never sleep in her arms again. The thought of it makes me sick, and it makes me want to join her. The rose will help me. It is time to start the killing. Time to fucking start. I walk to the front of the store. The man behind the counter watches me the entire time. As I pass a rack of chips, I reach out and I grab a bag. I don't look at the flavor because the flavor doesn't matter. All I'm going to taste is the rose. I arrive at the counter and I set my wares down in front of the man, and as he rings them up, I take the $4 out of my back pocket. I set the money in front of him and he takes it and puts it in the register and he hands me a dime. I have 10 cents to my name. 10 cents and a bottle of wine and a bag of chips and half a pack of cigarettes and a beat-up truck. The chips and the wine will be gone in 20 minutes. The cigarettes will be gone tomorrow. I'm starting to think I'll follow them. I walk out of the store. It's cold. The wind. The motherfucking wind. I walk to my truck. I open it. I get inside. It's still warm. I climb into the passenger seat. I know that if I get caught drinking in the driver's seat, I can be charged with driving under the influence. It doesn't matter if the car is moving or not. I can still be charged under the laws of every state in America. In the passenger seat, they can charge me with open container in a motor vehicle, the equivalent of a parking ticket. I settle into the seat. I light a cigarette. I open the chips, put a few in my mouth to chew. I set the bottle in my lap. I take it out of the brown paper bag that's holding it. I stare at it. My hands start shaking, my heart starts beating faster. Like Pavlov's dog, I react when alcohol is in front of me. I smoke with one hand, hold the bottle with the other. I have a decision to make. Yes or no? The fury is screaming, drink, motherfucker, drink, drink, drink. The grief I feel says, I will leave you if you feed me. My heart and my hands are shaking like dogs. They want the taste. I know if I open the cap and put the bottle in my lips, pour and swallow, I will be taking a road from which there is no return. I know that once I have it in me again, I will use it until I die from it. I was almost dead 6 months ago. Dead from the damage that hardcore drug and alcohol abuse caused to the body. Dead because I didn't want to live anymore. I chose life because of Lily and Leonard, and because once I tasted life again, it tasted good. Good enough to try to live it. Lily is dead now. Dead by her own hand. The how and why don't matter. All that matters is the end result. Death. I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm in this position. What the fuck am I gonna do? I stare. I have no money. I stare at the bottle. I have no job. I have nowhere to live. I stare at the bottle. I am an alcoholic and a drug addict. I have been incarcerated for the last 6 months of my life in a treatment center and in jail. The bottle. I'm shaking. The fury is screaming. The grief is overwhelming me. Please, please, please. I can make it all go away. I can kill it. Killing it would be the first step toward killing myself. Everything I have dreamed about and hoped for and wanted and expected is gone. It's dead and it's not coming back. There is no nightmare to wake from. This is my fucking life. What am I going to do? the bottle. I start to cry. What? Cry. There is sun streaming through the front window of my truck. It is bright, but it is not warm. It is early morning and I am waiting. The bottle of rose is sitting on the seat next to me. It is still full. I spent the night crying, staring at the bottle, smoking, cursing. I cursed God, that motherfucker. I cursed myself. I should have gotten here earlier. I cursed everyone I saw. I screamed at them and I cursed them. I cursed my truck. It didn't do anything. I cursed it anyway. I cursed the ground, the sky, the night. I cursed the bottle in my hand. I cursed the parts of me that wanted it. I cursed them and I defied them and they cursed me and they tried to defy me. I cursed my shaking hand, my beating heart. I cursed myself. I should have known. I should have stopped her. I cursed the dime in my pocket. I cursed the potato chip bag. I cursed Lily. I cursed Lily. How could she have done this to herself? I cursed and I cried. How could she have done this to herself? It is early morning and I'm waiting. The bottle of rose is sitting on the seat next to me and it's still full. I'm going to keep it. I am going to keep it so that if I decide to use it, it will be within reach. I made it through last night. But that does not mean I will make it through today or tomorrow. I am waiting. I am waiting for the sun to move above me. I am waiting to hear the bells ring 10. I am waiting to call my friend Leonard. He told me that if I ever needed help, he would give it to me. I need help now. I have no money and no job and nowhere to live. I am waiting to call Leonard. I need help now. I start the truck. I pull out of my parking space and start driving back toward the house. If I get hold of Leonard and he helps me, I will need to be near the house. The people there will know where Lily is and who has taken her. I want to see her again before she's gone. I want to see her again. I find my way back. I see the house. I pull over and I park. I get out of the truck, look around me. I see the flower store. I see the steeple that holds the bells. I see a park. The park is empty. I see a bank and a shoe store and a diner. I start walking toward the diner. I open the door, step inside. It is warm and loud. It smells like bacon and eggs. There are people at every table, eating, drinking coffee, talking. There is a short hall in the back of the diner. I can see two bathrooms and a phone. I walk toward the phone, reach into my back pocket. I take out my wallet and I take out a card from my wallet. The card has five names on it, five numbers. They all belong to Leonard. I pick up the phone and I dial 0. I speak to an operator. I give her my name and the first number. I tell her I need to make a collect call. She puts it through. No one answers. We try the second number. No answer. We try the third. The call is denied. We try the fourth. I hear Leonard answer. Collect call from James? Fuck yeah. Thank you. The operator hangs up. My son. What's up, Leonard? You're out of jail and you're in Chicago. That's what's up. Yeah, I'm here. How is it? Not good. What happened? I start to break. I don't want to talk about it. What's wrong? I need your help, Leonard. What happened? I need your help. What do you need? I need $30,000. What? I need $30,000, Leonard. What the fuck is going on there? You told me to call if I ever needed help. I need fucking help. I need 30 grand. Are you drinking? No. Getting high? No. What the fuck is wrong? I start to break. I need money. He does not speak. Please, Leonard. He does not speak. Please. I hear him take a deep breath. Where are you? In a diner? How do you want me to get it to you? Thank you, Leonard.
You're my son. I'm going to take care of you.
Thank you, Leonard.
Now tell me how you want me to get you the money.
I give him the address of the house. He tells me that it will be there in an hour. I thank him. Thank you, Leonard. He asks me if I want him to come to Chicago, and I tell him no. He asks again if I'm drunk or high, and he wants to make sure, and I tell him no. He says that though he does not need to know right now, at some point he'll want to know why I need so much money. I say, fine. I thank him again, and he says, don't worry about it, and I say, thank you again, and we hang up. Thank you, Leonard. Thank you. I walk out of the diner and I walk back toward my truck, toward the house. As I get closer, my heart starts beating faster. I think about what happened in the house. The images in my mind are clear. Hanging, hanging, hanging. I try to push the images away, but they remain hanging, hanging, hanging. Every step is harder, every step is heavier. I start up the walk that leads to the door. Every step, hanging. I open the door, step into the foyer. I want to leave. The images are clear. The same woman is sitting behind the desk. There are some red roses in a vase next to her. She looks up at me, and I say hello, and she says hello, and she motions toward the roses, and she tells me that she saved them for me. I thank her, and I ask for Tom. She says, he's out. Can I help you? There is a chair across from her. I sit down. I want to leave. The images are clear. The bathroom where Lily hung is in this house. I look at the woman and I speak. I need some information. I keep the flowers. They were for Lily, not for the house. I keep them in water and I will use them. They were for Lily. I give all of her clothing to an organization that helps the poor. She did not have much, but maybe it will help someone. I give her books to the library. She wanted to go to college and she'd been studying for the entrance exams. She had 7 books, all textbooks. What little money she had was in a box beneath her bed. I give it to a homeless woman who's sitting alone on a bench. The woman tells me it is enough to get her a place in a shelter for 2 months. I hope that time makes a difference. She had a plastic Superwoman watch. I always thought it was funny that she wore it. I find it on a table next to her bed. When I find it, I cry. I hold it to my heart and I cry. I keep it in my pocket. She had a hairbrush, a toothbrush, a tube of toothpaste and a bottle of shampoo and a bar of soap. I leave everything in the bathroom. She had a simple silver necklace. It held a platinum cross. Her grandmother gave it to her. It was her most cherished possession. I find it on a table next to her bed. When I find it, I cry. I want to give it back to her. I want to give it back. I don't have any photographs of Lily. I don't have any photographs of the two of us together. The only documentation I have of our relationship is a large stack of letters, some written by me, some by her. This lack of documentation has made seeing her more difficult. Tom helps me. He speaks to an assistant medical examiner. He speaks to the medical examiner. He confirms that Lily did not have any family aside from her grandmother, who was in the morgue with her. He confirms that I was her boyfriend and that I am the only person who is likely to claim her body. He helps talk the medical examiner into letting me see her, just once, by myself. I am going to see her. I walk down a hallway, a bright, clean, sterile hallway. At the end of the hallway is a large metal door. A man is standing in front of the door. He is wearing a white lab coat and latex gloves. An air filtration mask hangs at his neck. As I approach, he says hello, and I say hello, and he opens the door, and he gestures me inside, and I walk through the door, and he follows me. The door closes behind us. I am in a large, open room. Along one wall is a bank of stainless steel cabinets. Along another are three sinks and a large stainless steel countertop. Along the back wall, there are four rows of doors, each with a handle like the handles on large refrigerators. There is a stainless steel table in the middle of the room, a halogen lamp above it, a drain below it. There is a body on the table, a body that is covered by a white sheet. I turn to the man. Can I be alone? Yes. Thank you. He motions toward a counter near the cabinets. There are gloves and masks over there if you want to use them. Thank you. He turns and he leaves. I turn back to the body. I stare at it. I am scared. My heart starts pounding to the point that it hurts. I am scared. I take a deep breath. Part of me wants to run, to get the fuck out of here. That is her body, her dead body beneath that sheet. Part of me knows that I need to do this. I have to see her. I have to see her. I have to see her. I step forward. Once, twice. Heart pounding. I step forward. I am next to the table. I stand and I stare at the sheet. She is beneath it. I place the palm of my hand in the center of the sheet. My heart is fucking pounding. I softly press so that I can feel beneath the sheet. My hand is somewhere on her stomach. I start moving it along the top of the sheet, along the contour of her body. She's beneath the sheet, and I can feel her body. The body I once held, the body I loved, the body that loved me. I run my hand up the curve of her neck, over her chin. I move it to the edge of the sheet. I put my other hand with my first. My heart is fucking pounding. My hands are shaking. I start to slowly pull the sheet. I see her hair, jet black, so black it is almost blue. I slowly pull. I see her skin. It was pale like porcelain in life. It is pale gray now. I slowly pull. I see her eyebrows, black. I see her lashes, black. I see her eyes closed. They were blue in life. Beautiful, clear, deep water blue in life. They are closed, and I will leave them closed. I pull the sheet slowly, her cheekbones strong and defined. I pull past her nose. I pull down and across her lips. Full and red, they are still full. They are also quiet, calm, still. At rest. I pull the sheet down across her chin and off her face. I pull the sheet from her neck. She has a deep blue bruise around her throat. Whatever she used was thick, maybe a towel, I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I pull the sheet to her shoulders. She's not wearing a shirt. I will not expose her naked flesh. I will respect her in death as I respected her in life. I let go of the sheet and I set it just below her shoulders. I stare at her. She is quiet, calm, still, at rest. I love her now as I did before I love her now. In death and in life. My heart is pounding and my hand is shaking. I love her. I stare. I run my hands along the top of her head and through her hair. I cry. I feel the contours of her face. I kiss my fingers and I press them to her lips. I cry. She is quiet. Calm. Still. At rest. I take her hand beneath the sheet. It is stiff and cold. I take her hand. I am with her. I hold her. I love her. She's at rest. Cry. They sleep in peace. They sleep in peace. Grieve. I grieve alone. Grieve. I call my friend Kevin. Kevin is an old close friend, one of the closest friends that I've had in my life. We met at school and we lived together while we were there, and he watched me as I fell apart and helped me as I started to pick up the pieces of my shattered life. He knew I was coming here, though he didn't know exactly when I would arrive. He says, "Welcome to Chicago," and I say, "Thanks," and he asks me how I'm doing, and I say, "Fine," and he asks me how it was. He's aware of what I was doing in Ohio, and I tell him it was fine. He knows about Lily, and he asks me how it was going with her, and I tell him bad, and he asks me what happened, and I tell him I don't want to talk about it. He asks me if I'm okay. I tell him I don't want to talk about it. I ask him when he'll be off work, and he tells me 7, and we agree to meet at his apartment. Kevin lives on the north side of the city. His apartment is on the first floor of a 4-story brownstone on a street lined with 4-story brownstones. The neighborhood is full of people in their 20s working their first or second professional jobs. The streets are lined with suits and skirts and loafers. I find the building easily, park in front of it. I can see through the windows a group of people smoking cigarettes and drinking. I get out of my car and I take a deep breath. I don't want to do this, to see a group of people. I'm nervous and scared. I'm used to being alone. I know I need to break the solitude, to spend time among the living. I push the buzzer, walk through the door into the hall. He's waiting for me. He is smiling. He steps forward and he gives me a hug and he speaks. "It's good to see you, buddy." "You too." We separate. "Who's inside?" "Some people who want to see you." "Who?" "Come in and see." "You won't tell me?" "Just come in." I take a deep breath. I know I need to try and move forward with my life. I step inside. I see people I know, people I'm friends with, people I'm surprised to see. Adrian and Allie. Two friends, great friends. For several years we drank together and smoked together and laughed together and sometimes cried together. Aaron and Courtney, they were her friends, someone I was with in a different life. They were her friends and they became my friends. I don't know if they see her or speak to her, and I don't care. It was a different life. David and Scott, older than me. I used to drink and smoke and snort with them. They're bankers now, buttoned up and prim. Callie and Kim. They live with Kevin. I used to sell them drugs. Occasionally I use drugs with them. All of them know that I recently came out of a drug and alcohol treatment center. Only Kevin knows about jail. They all seem happy to see me. They also seem scared to drink around me and smoke around me and be themselves around me. They ask me tentative questions. "How are you? Is everything okay? Is it all right if I have this drink around you? Are you comfortable like this?" I tell them I am fine, that the alcohol doesn't bother me, that they should be at ease. I keep a calm face and a relaxed demeanor. Inside, I am not calm. This is all overwhelming. All the noise, all the faces, all the words. I have been alone for a long time. Alone and unsocial. This room is full of people I know and I like and who have come here to see me, and it is overwhelming. We go to a bar. All of us together, we go to a bar. I shoot pool and smoke cigarettes and drink soda water. My friends shoot pool and smoke cigarettes and get drunk. As the night moves deeper, I speak less and less. As the night moves deeper, my friends lose the ability to speak. I do not judge them. I did what they are doing now every night for years. Got drunk and stumbled and slurred my words. I do not judge them. I am happy to see them. We stay at the bar until it closes. We leave, I say goodbye to everyone, thank them for coming to see me, and walk back to the apartment with Kevin and Callie and Kim. They go to their rooms and they go to bed. I find some blankets in a closet, and I go to the living room and I clear a space on the couch and I lie down. I stare at the ceiling. I start looking for an apartment. I look through the classified sections of the paper, I walk the streets, and I look for rental signs. I go to local real estate offices and I look through the listings. I don't want much and I don't need much. Almost all of the money is gone. I want something simple and small and clean. Somewhere for me to sit and sleep and read. Somewhere for me to be alone. Simple and small and clean. I find a place on my second day. It's on a small street, only one block long. At one end of the street, there are two giant steel giraffes on opposite corners. They're ridiculous and they make me laugh. At the other end, there is a delicate little restaurant. Its menu is written in Italian. Trees line both sides of the street, and though I know nothing about the neighborhood, it feels like somewhere that I could live for a while. The apartment itself is in a large five-story building shaped like a U. It is a one-room apartment on the first floor. It has one brick wall, plain wood floors, an oven and refrigerator. There are three windows. All of them are barred. There are two doors. The doors are in opposite corners. One of them leads into a hall and the other to an alley where there are several large dumpsters. I meet the building superintendent. His name is Mickey, and he's about 30. He is thin and effeminate, and he has blonde hair and blue eyes, and he wears pajamas. He says he is a painter who is working as a super because he gets free rent, money, and lots of time to paint. As he reads my application, I see him occasionally glancing up at me. He finishes and he tells me that he isn't usually allowed to rent apartments to people without jobs. I tell him that I intend to find one. He asks if I have any references and I say no. He says he'll need to check with his boss, and I take all of the remaining cash that I have and I place it in front of him. That's a deposit and 2 months' rent and a bit extra for you. He looks down at the money, back at me. How much extra? Another month. He looks me up and down. You seem nice. I chuckle. And you seem like you won't be much trouble. I laugh again. He reaches out his hand. Welcome to the building. I shake his hand, smile. Thank you. We let go of each other's hands. When do you want to move in? Right now. You're in a hurry? I need somewhere to live. He reaches into a file and takes out a lease. He asks me some questions, fills in the answers. I sign the lease. He hands me the keys. Thank you. You're welcome. I stand. I'll see you around. He nods. You certainly will. I turn and I leave. I walk to my truck, which is parked on the curb outside the building. I get my clothes and my bottle and I walk back to the apartment. I open the door and I step inside. I set my clothes in a pile on the floor. I hold the bottle in my hand. I have taken it with me almost everywhere that I have gone in the last few days. I keep it with me as a test of my strength. I keep it with me in case I change my mind. I feel like I want it now, the rose. I feel like I want it all the time, but more now, more. I set it on the floor in the middle of the apartment. I open the door. I'm going to walk. Walking calms me. It is cold outside. The wind screams through the streets like a whip. It lashes at my face, penetrates my clothes, stings me, shakes me, hurts me. I start to walk. No agenda, nowhere to go, no idea how to get there. I just walk. I pass the giraffes. I say goodbye, friends. I walk down a street called Broadway, lined with pawn shops. No dreams coming true here. I walk past Wrigley Field. It's a baseball stadium, dead in winter. Old and silent and noble and dark. I walk under the elevated train tracks. The ground shakes beneath them. Every 5 minutes, the ground is shaking. I walk past people, some I can't see. They are hiding from the winter. I walk past store after store after store, selling things I don't need. I walk past apartment buildings, light and warm, and offices light and warm, and schools light and warm. I walk past a hospital, a police station, a firehouse. I just walk. For whatever the reason, it helps me forget. For whatever the reason, it brings me calm. As the day fades, the temperature drops, the light disappears. I've been walking for hours. I make my way back to Kevin's apartment. I see him through the window drinking wine. His roommates are smoking. I hit the buzzer, go inside, sit with them as they drink and smoke. I tell them about my apartment. They want to celebrate. We go back to the same bar we were in last night. We meet most of the same people. I sit with them as they drink and smoke. I have a glass of water. I want to drink. Part of me wants to drink. One drink, two drinks, five drinks, 20. I want to drink because I know drinking will make it all go away. The pain I feel, the sadness and sorrow and grief that are with me all day, every second and every breath and beat of my heart, in every thought and every step and everything I see and hear, there is nothing but pain and sadness and sorrow and grief, and I know drinking will make it go away. I also know it will kill me if I do it. Maybe not today or tomorrow, but it will kill me. If I start, I won't be able to stop. There is pain and sadness and sorrow and grief. I have a glass of water. I sit with my friends as they drink and smoke. When it is time to leave, I go back to Kevin's apartment with him. I borrow 3 blankets and a pillow. I walk back to my new apartment. It is bitter fucking cold. And as I walk, I wrap myself in the blankets and I clutch the pillow against my chest. I am tired. I don't know why I'm here or what the fuck I'm doing. I need a job and I need some money. I am lonely. I miss Lily so much. So much. It is the dead of night and it is bitter fucking cold. And I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I find the giraffes. I say hello. I find my building and I open the door, and I find my apartment and I open the door. I step inside. I don't turn on the light and I don't take off my jacket or my boots. I lie down on the floor. The blankets are wrapped around me and I'm clutching the pillow. I want a drink, but I know drinking will kill me. I want Lily, but I know she's not coming back. I am tired and I want to sleep. Sleep is not coming. I lie on the floor. I need a job and I need some money. I find a paper and I look through the classifieds. I write down addresses and walk around the city. It's cold and the wind is a whip, but the walking calms me. I apply for several jobs. 2 at bars, working as a doorman. 1 at a clothing store, working in the stockroom. 1 at a coffee shop, serving the coffee and working the register. 2 at gas stations, pumping the gas. I shake hands and I smile and I am told to wait. I give them Kevin's phone number. I wait. At the end of the day, I meet Kevin. He takes me out for pizza. I didn't eat today. I'm flat fucking broke. After we eat, we meet our friends at the bar. They drink and smoke, and I drink water and smoke. We shoot pool and talk and laugh. I am starting to be able to laugh again. I stay late, sitting, watching, laughing, smoking. I don't laugh much, but every now and then is fine. The night ends and I walk back to Kevin's apartment with him. Check the messages. Nobody's called me. I walk home. It is home for at least the next 2 months. I have nowhere else to go. I lie down on the floor and I wrap myself in the blankets and I clutch the pillow. Sleep does not come easily. Seconds become minutes, become hours. Hours. I lie on the floor and I clutch the pillow. I miss her. I'm alone. I miss her. Dark becomes light. I lie on the floor. At last, I sleep. I sleep. Sleep. I hear my door open. I'm not sure if what I hear is a dream or not. I hear footsteps across my floor. I'm awake, I know it's not a dream. I hear voices. Words being whispered, someone's in my apartment. What the fuck is going on here? I hear words, someone is in my apartment. I'm awake. This is not a dream. Someone is here. I crack my eyes, look through the slits. My heart starts pounding. I see two pairs of leather shoes, expensive shoes. Who the fuck is here? I try to place the shoes. I can't. I try to place the voices. I can't hear them well enough to place them. I crack my eyes more, look up without moving my head. Why the fuck would somebody be in my apartment? Cabinet doors start opening and closing. I look up more. 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 I see the backs of two heads. I see a familiar bald spot. I open my eyes and I sit up and I speak. Leonard? Leonard turns around. He's wearing a black trench coat and black suit, and he's holding a bag of coffee.
My son.
What are you doing here?
You remember Snapper?
How did you find me?
Had someone look. Wasn't hard.
How'd you get in here?
He motions to the man next to him.
Had him open the door. That wasn't hard either.
I look at the man, who has turned around as well. He's tall and thick and has short black hair and is also wearing a black trench coat and a black suit.
I met him when he picked Leonard up from the treatment center. He's an intimidating man. A man who looks more like a bear than a person. A man I would avoid were he not with my friend.
How you doing, Snapper?
I'm okay, kid.
I look back at Leonard.
What are you doing here?
Come here.
How did you get in my apartment?
Just come here.
I stand.
What?
He motions me forward.
Come here.
I step toward Leonard. He steps toward me. He opens his arms and he puts them around me.
I'm sorry for your loss.
I start to speak, but I can't.
I'm so sorry.
I start to cry. He hugs me. I start to cry. I cry. In the shower. As I brush my teeth. As I get dressed. Cry. I've never experienced anything like this. Nothing else comes close. Grief, sorrow, sadness. Pain, pain, pain. A hole in my chest that cannot be filled. A wound that is leaking. A break that I can't repair. I'm broken and I can't repair myself, and there's nothing I can do. I cry as I get dressed. I cry. I take a deep breath, compose myself. I step out of the bathroom. Leonard and the Snapper are waiting for me. We leave the apartment and I lock the door and we walk to the car, which is sitting at the curb. It's new and large. A white four-door Mercedes-Benz with black one-way windows. From what Leonard has told me, it is the only type of car that he will own, ride in, or drive. He opens the front passenger's door and climbs inside. Snapper opens the driver's door and sits behind the wheel. I get in the back seat and Snapper starts the engine and we pull away from the curb. We drive out to the lake, head south down Lakeshore Drive toward the center of the city. I stare out the window. The lake is frozen. The trees without leaves. The wind strong enough that I feel it pushing the car. Leonard turns around, speaks.
You hungry?
I look at him.
Yeah. You look thin.
Jail food, and I haven't been eating much since I've been here.
I hate fucking jail food.
Snapper speaks.
Me too. That shit sucks.
Leonard speaks.
I always try to pay someone to bring me real food.
Snapper speaks. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Leonard speaks.
I should have done that with you. Paid some motherfucker to bring you a Big Mac.
I laugh.
It's not funny. You're too thin. You look sick. We're going to fatten you up while we're here.
I smile. Okay.
When we get where we're going, I'm going to order you some bacon. A big plate of nothing but bacon.
Okay.
And then we'll get a big lunch.
Okay.
And then we'll get a big dinner. A huge fucking dinner. Steaks, spinach, cake, all kinds of tasty shit.
I laugh.
And you can bring your friends. However many you want. Everybody's welcome.
Laugh again.
It's good to see you laughing, my son. It's good to see that. I'd be very scared if I couldn't make you laugh.
No reason to be scared, Leonard.
You just had a fucking bomb dropped on you. You seem okay, but that doesn't mean I'm not scared.
I'm fine, Leonard.
You keep saying that to yourself, and eventually you will be fine, but don't try to lie to me about it now. I know you're not fine, and you shouldn't expect to be, and that's okay.
I look at him.
It's okay to be fucked up, James.
And it all comes back. I look down, bite my lip, try to stop myself from crying.
It's okay.
I nod, try to hold back the tears. I turn away from Leonard, look out the window. He leaves me to myself. I try to hold back the tears, but I can't. We drive south toward the city. The lake is frozen. I stare out the window, the tears running down my cheeks. We reach a sweeping turn in the drive. There is frozen beach on our left. We take a right into a mass of steel and stone and glass. We start to drive down Michigan Avenue. Skyscrapers line both sides of the street. The sidewalks are crowded, people bundled and warm. Nobody is bothered by the cold. The Hancock lies ahead of us, grows larger as we approach. Wide and strong, a majestic tower of black steel. I try to follow it with my eyes. It stretches beyond my line of sight. I look straight up. It rises higher. We take a right off the avenue. Snapper pulls up in front of an elegant entrance with a red carpet and a black canopy. He stops the car. Two uniformed bellmen open the side doors. A valet rushes to the driver's door. Leonard and I get out of the car. Snapper waves off the valet and pulls away. I ask Leonard where he's going, and Leonard says that he's parking the car. I ask why he doesn't let the valet do it. He says it's safer that way. Nobody can access the car if the snapper parks it. I sometimes forget who Leonard is and what he does for a living. Snapper parks the car. We walk under the canopy. Doors are held open for us. We enter a small oak lobby. We stand in front of an elevator and we wait for it. When it arrives, we step inside. It is also oak. Its carpet thick and deep, blood red. It is as nice an elevator as I have ever seen. Its control panel only has one button. Leonard pushes it, and up we go very quickly. My ears pop. We stop. The doors silently slide open. We step into another lobby, this one huge, with soaring ceilings, expensive furniture, a subtle reception counter, three well-dressed concierges. We walk through the lobby toward a restaurant on the far side. It sits in the front of a huge bank of windows with a view of the city and the lake. We stop at the hostess stand. Leonard says, hello. The hostess smiles and asks if he would like his usual table. He says, of course, madam, and there is no need for you to escort us. She laughs and we walk to a table for four near the windows. We sit down. A waitress comes. She says hello to Leonard. She seems to know him too. She offers him a menu, and he says, no, thank you, I already know what we would like. She says, okay, and he orders a plate of bacon, a big plate of nothing but bacon. He orders a plate of sausage, a big plate of nothing but sausage. He orders blueberry pancakes, Belgian waffles, scrambled eggs, fried eggs. He orders a pot of coffee, and a pitcher of water, and 3 glasses of milk. He orders 3 omelets, one with cheese, one with steak, one with spinach and tomatoes, and he orders corned beef hash and hash browns and roasted potatoes and 4 types of toast. The waitress is laughing, and so am I, and Leonard looks at the ceiling and starts scratching his chin. He asks himself if he forgot anything, and he thinks for a moment, and he says, "Ha, I did forget a couple of things." He orders a basket of scones and a basket of muffins. The waitress asks if that is all, and he says, "Yes, for now." She laughs again, and she walks away. The snapper joins us. He sits next to Leonard, across from me. Leonard looks at him, and the snapper nods. Leonard turns to me, speaks.
"Time to talk."
"Something wrong?"
"I'm not sure. That's why we need to talk."
"Okay."
Leonard looks me in the eyes.
"You drinking?"
I shake my head.
"No."
"You doing drugs?"
"No."
"After what's happened, I'll understand if you are."
"I'm not."
"And I'd rather have you be using than have you lie to me."
"I'm not lying to you, Leonard."
"You sure?"
"Yeah." Leonard looks at Snapper. Snapper reaches into one of the side pockets of his trench coat and draws out my bottle of rose. He sets it in the middle of the table. Leonard looks back at me.
"Care to explain?"
I laugh.
"It's not funny.
First you break into my place, and now you're stealing shit from it."
"Yeah."
I shake my head. "That's fucked up, Leonard."
"Why do you have it?"
"Because I've been thinking about it. I keep it on hand in case I decide I want it."
"You don't want it."
"We'll see."
"Trust me, you don't want it."
"We'll see."
"No, we won't see. Drinking is not an option for you."
"That's for me to decide, Leonard."
"You want to die?"
"No."
"That's what will happen if you start again."
"I know."
"Do you think that's what she would want for you?"
"I haven't thought about it."
"Maybe you should."
"Maybe you should leave it alone."
"She wouldn't want you drinking."
"Shut the fuck up, Leonard."
"She couldn't do it, but you know she'd want you to."
"Shut the fuck up, Leonard."
"Didn't she used to say that a second of freedom is worth more than a lifetime of bondage?"
"Yeah, she did. Now change the fucking subject."
"She wasn't strong enough, James. She couldn't do it over the long term."
"Shut the fuck up, Leonard."
"But you can, and she would want you to, and you should remember that." "Fuck you, Leonard."
I reach out, take the bottle, set it on the floor next to my chair. I appreciate the sentiment, and I'm not going to fucking talk about it anymore. The food arrives. We eat in silence. The bacon is hot and crispy. The sausage, thick and juicy. The pancakes with syrup, sweet. I drink 1, 2, 3 cups of coffee. I look at my food or out the window. I do not look at Leonard or Snapper. The bottle is at my feet. The decision is mine. I hear Leonard set down his fork and his knife, take a deep breath, let out a long sigh. He speaks.
"James."
I look up.
"Yeah?"
"You promised me 2 things and I won't bring that shit up again."
"What?"
"Promise me you didn't spend the money I gave you on drugs or liquor."
"I didn't."
"And promise me if you do decide to drink, you'll call me and talk to me before you do it."
"I can promise you that."
Leonard turns to Snapper.
"You heard him, right?"
Snapper nods.
"Yes, I did."
Leonard turns to me.
"You're going to have to deal with Snap if you break the promises."
I laugh.
"Fine."
"You laughed. That's good. I came here to have some fucking fun, and I want you laughing, and I want you having fun. It'll help." I nod. I know. I want you to stay in the hotel with us tonight. I got you a room right next to our rooms.
You didn't need to do that.
I know I didn't need to. But I wanted to, and I already did. And feel free to take whatever you want from the minibar. The chips are tasty and the cola is cold.
I laugh again. Leonard keeps talking and we eat. We finish eating and we stand and Leonard leaves a $100 bill on the table and we walk to a bank of elevators in the lobby. We step inside, Leonard hands me a key. The doors close and we move up quickly and silently. The doors open and we step out. The hall is quiet and the walls are perfectly painted. The lights dim, the carpet thick. We walk to the end of the hall. There are three rooms in a line. Leonard speaks.
You want to go down to the pool?
I speak. I'm going to take a nap.
Take a nap? It's not even 10 o'clock.
I'm tired.
Leonard looks at Snapper.
He's tired.
Snapper speaks.
So what? Let him sleep.
Leonard looks at me.
How long you want to sleep for?
An hour or so.
We'll come get you in an hour. We'll go down to the pool, do some swimming, maybe some jacuzzi.
Okay.
Leonard points to a door.
That's your room. I'm in the middle. Snap's over there.
I walk to my door, open it.
See you in a while.
I step inside, close the door, walk down a short hall. I pass a large bathroom and I walk into a large, open room. There are three large windows across one wall. I can see the skyline. I can see the lake. It is still frozen. There is a large oak cabinet against another wall. I walk to it and I open it. There is a large television sitting on a shelf in the upper half. A mini bar is built into the lower half. Sitting against the third wall is a giant bed. There are nightstands on both sides of the bed. There are phones on both of them. I walk to the bed and I pull the sheets down. They are white and clean and soft. I kick off my boots and I sit down on the bed and I take off my socks. I climb under the covers, put my head on a pillow, close my eyes, clutch myself. The bed is soft.